I'm Shantae Snowgrove, creator of Parenting Special Needs Magazine, and I'm speaking with Douglas Haddad, an award-winning educator and best-selling author. And we will be discussing his new book, The Ultimate Guide to Raising Teens and Tweens, Strategies for Unlocking Your Child's Full Potential. And folks, if you're just tuning in, welcome, and we're glad you're taking a few minutes of your day to watch this video with us.
Well, first off, my name is Douglas Haddad, and I'm a middle school teacher in Connecticut. And I have an experience with children over 20 years working with them in a variety of different backgrounds as a middle school teacher, coach, mentor. I've actually traveled across to California and spoke with a bunch of educators about the topic of everything you can imagine, from bullying to violence to everything that relates to the traditional problems that children encounter to issues that are going on today. So the perspective of discipline is something that's interesting because, Shantae, the word discipline is actually from the Latin term disciplinare. And what it actually means is to teach. And a lot of people think, oh, it's something, must be punishment to discipline a child. No. So effective discipline is really about effective communication. And that's what I'd say to all parents out there. Now, there's three aspects to it. Number one, you want to effectively communicate positive messages to your child. I mean, that's really what it's all about. And in my book, I talk about how to effectively communicate, how to use positive reinforcement rather than punishment. Punishment is the tertiary approach. And then really going about it and saying positive messages. Now, I say positive because children want to be uplifted. They always want to be validated, their feelings. So if they're constantly, if you're listening to what they're saying to just scold them and reprimand them versus what I say, listen to understand them, then they're always going to be in a defensive mode and they're not going to want to communicate with you. Talk about small things, or how was your day at school? Oh, it was fine, you know, versus, you know, so tell me a little bit about what happened when you got in trouble at school. They're not going to want to say anything. They're just going to shut down if discipline's just about a one-way approach, not listening to them. So really, that's, you know, what we're talking about. We talk about, you know, effective discipline. Kids at a young age, they respond better to verbal prohibitions, all right? So telling them, you know, don't do this, and without giving them a lot of reason. However, when you're dealing with older children, you need to provide a little bit of that reason in there. I don't want you to play football because it is dangerous for you. It could lead to a concussion. It could lead to broken bones. And as you get older, I certainly wouldn't want to see you walking around at 40, 50 years old, always with aches and pains. So
this might be normal. No,
yeah, I know. I know the new norm. Well, I'll tell you what, the amount of concussions kids are getting these days too. Yeah. It's scary. It might be the new normal for them. So for parents to really set the appropriate boundaries, and in my book too, I talk about effective discipline as using empathy with effective consequences. So when you talk about setting appropriate limits, and that's sort of the play on words a little bit, where children, if they're unlimited in anything they can see, unlimited in anything they can do, unlimited in anything they can't do, if they don't feel like, oh, I don't feel like doing homework, or whatever, doesn't matter, then that's going to limit them in their ability to read, to write, to speak, to be able to fill out an application to get a job. I mean, all these skills are going to catch up with them, and that's going to limit them later on down the road. So that's where I talk about setting appropriate limits so they can become unlimited in their full potential. And that's part of effective discipline, too.
Right. Well, and I want to ask you one thing, because this is something after reading the book, I tried to put this in play, and I need a little help bridging the gap, so maybe you can advise. So you talk about the natural consequences, which I think is great, and with my daughter, per se, she happens to repeat things over and over and over again to the point that I'm probably nuts and can't respond at all. So I tend to... I was thinking after I read your book, I tried to put it in play, and a couple, you know, it worked perfect the first couple of times. And it's probably me. I'm not sure how to bridge the gap, or sometimes I can't think of natural consequences. It's like, so is there a way, or is there advice on that?
So give me an example of what your daughter's repeating.
Okay. So my daughter has anxiety, and she gets very excited about any kind of event that is coming up. So today is a birthday party. There's two birthday parties she's going to get to go to. So I have heard about these birthday parties, which it is a very exciting thing. I'm happy for her.
Yeah.
I've heard about them nonstop. So she's asked me repeatedly. And so we're working with behavior therapy and all that kind of stuff. But sometimes I just know when I'm in the thick of it, I can't think of the natural consequence. I'm just like, I react.
Okay, so a child's natural joy and excitement is what we want, but we don't want it to become burdensome on the parent. So what I particularly would advise, and something I do in the classroom, something I've worked one-on-one as a mentor with a child, whether it's getting out frustration that's on their mind, whether it's letting out pent-up energy of excitement, is you want them to be able to creatively use it as an outlet. So what I'd recommend is say, oh, well, why don't you do some drawings on it? So express how you feel in this way. I tell kids too as well, even when they don't like a topic and something or are frustrated, write out their feelings, write out a poem, create a song about it, act it out. So different creative means versus let's tell mom again how excited they are. Use a different modality to express
it. That's great advice. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other, I know you had, what does it take to raise a 3S child?
Yeah. Well, in my book, I talk about a 3S child. You're really looking at, every parent really wants their child to be smart in some way. They want them to be successful overall, and they want them to be self-disciplined. That's really the core of what any parent is seeking for. Now, here's what's interesting in that. What is smart? So right then, that's the big thing. See, smart, I believe, there's so many different types. As Howard Gardner talks about the multiple intelligences, we've seen that one kid who's a great test taker may not be a great, let's say, mathematician, may be great at taking tests in English, or maybe great at taking tests in science, but may not be strong in our subject. Well, other kids may be more musically inclined, so they're smart in terms of the notation and expressing themselves. Other kids are more smart on the field athletically. All right, they're bodily kinesthetic. They know how to move in certain ways and better in coordination. So whatever it takes to tap into a child's overall smartness and let them feel smart, that's what's key. Success, again, is all relative. For a child to feel success, and Shante, I say feel because it's all about perception. If, I could say to myself, well, you know, I have this book out here, and I've written this book to help parents. And let's say my perception is, well, I need to sell 1 million copies of this to be successful. Oh, and I only sold 10,000 copies. Ugh, the book's not a success. But if my perception is that it's not about selling, it's about making sure that whoever does see this, that this works, that this helps others, and then others out there can benefit from this, no matter what child you have or whatever. That, to me, personally, is success. So for somebody to, a child to feel that, is key. And in my book, I talk about strategies, too, on how children can become good problem solvers, how children could better effectively communicate. So I think nowadays, that's really what's been on the backlash. Kids are just so much into technology. Their immersion is too intense. And I've seen as a teacher, they don't want to stand up in front of the classroom and speak. You know, it's easier for them just to text. It's easier for them to sort of evade that personal responsibility of communicating. Problem solving, again, is another thing that's gone by the wayside because, oh, if I don't get the answer to it, guess where I'm going? I'm going to Google, my best friend. And I think that becomes another issue too. So even as a teacher, I see it's not so much myself as giving all this information. And for parents out there, telling your child exactly what to do, how to do it, it's more facilitating them and guiding them for them to discover their own talents, their own unique strengths, and their own unique abilities, allowing them to fail within safe means. I use that word fail, meaning their own personal, oh, they went down, and then they can build themselves up. Because failing is not to fall, but it's to break. And we don't want to break.
It's learning. There's not a lot of time for learning, you know, the new skills. We make it almost where it's a pressure to be successful right off the bat, and they need the time to learn, new skills.
They need the time to learn new skills, and they need the time to actually be able to have coping mechanisms to utilize that. Because, again, if they don't have, and there's a variety of things. I mean, I talk about in my book, too, how to set up meaningful goals and how to achieve it. A lot of kids just spin their wheels, or if things aren't working well, there's no plan in place. They don't have any system to achieve it, and then they just give up. So, and I think that's really important for parents to help guide their children to set goals. Again, give positive encouragement all the time. I believe you. You can do it. I'm proud of you. Look at what you've done. You know, make a comparison. Kid really wants to do well at one sport, but doesn't seem to do as well on that sport that they really love as they maybe do at some other activity. Say, hey, every expert was once a beginner. You know, you didn't just come out of the womb being a great skier. You know, you want to be a great golfer. It takes the same sort of discipline. So positive encouragement goes a long way.
Yeah, no, I think I agree. In your book, you share something that probably took a lot of courage about your personal experience being bullied. Mm. How has that impacted your life? And given the recent incident or the report of the 8-year-old committing suicide because of being bullied, and also, I know this is like a twofold question, but with children with special needs, sometimes they're not able to communicate what's going on or effectively communicate what's happening. So the second part of that question is what the first part is. I wanted to hear from you about how it impacted your life. Mm-hmm. And then two, I wanted you to answer that question and try to help parents who may have children that have a hard time communicating, how they can help them with situations like that, because it is a problem with our kids. It's a problem in general, but our kids even get it more and can't communicate back to what's going on. So anyways, I'm sorry for a loaded question, but there you go.
No, that's a great question. I think it shaped a lot in terms of my desire to help other kids. I grew up in a neighborhood that had a lot of children, and I was one of the kids in there that would never follow the crowd. I was one that was taught from a young age to always be my own person. Don't do what's wrong, stand up for what's right. Now, with that being said, I was not in a neighborhood of kids that appreciated that. And there was one child in a neighborhood, unfortunately, he grew up in a tough family home. His father was an alcoholic and beat him and his brother. And certainly, looking back now as an adult, I don't blame the reason why he turned into a bully and sort of let out a lot of his frustrations on me and attempted on others as well. But unfortunately, what happened is a lot of the kids in the neighborhood followed him and rallied around him, became accomplices and bystanders. So as a result of that, you know, I dealt with, for a number of years, I dealt with verbal abuse. I dealt with physical abuse on the bus, being brought to the back of the bus and beat up and coming home, you know, bloodied and bruised. Oh, yeah. But the thing is, I credit my parents for the ones that really guided me through it all. I mean, if I didn't have strong parents, I don't know what I'd become today. And I'm honest with that. And there's a lot of kids who either would lash out and become very violent and become, you know, get criminal records or, God forbid, become killers. And we see that with issues with Columbine, with potentially Sandy Hook and the storm that happened there. But all those different scenarios. And then you get the other extreme, children that are more introverted and that take and withdraw everything in and don't know how to remove that feeling of shame and guilt, and they take their own lives or they have self-deprecating behaviors. So you have both ends of the spectrum. So I had my parents to constantly ground me and bring me back into saying, you know, and they did the best they could. They wanted me to go tell a teacher. And eventually it hit a point where they realized that there's something really wrong here. My son is being, you know, abused, and it seems to be continued in this manner. And then eventually what happened is I had to stand up for myself and as I mentioned in my book, it turned out to be where my best friend was finally the one person who stood up when he said, "Hey, you like Haddad over here?" And he said, "He's my best friend." And then he goes, "Oh, really?" And he ended up getting kicked. His head got smashed into the soap dispenser. I mean, it sounds like a movie, but...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and as a result of that, it was a combination of my father sort of giving me the green light, saying, if he puts a hand on you, I give you permission, you know, to stand up for yourself. And then at that same day, my friend stood up for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just growing up, I really looked up to a lot of these glorified figures that stood up to justice, like He-Man and Hulk Hogan and all these, you know, demigods that really always, you know, stood up for the right thing. And I think that really at that moment, I knew when I had somebody there who could stand up for me, that really was the turning point. And that's one thing I would say out there to parents. I would say, try to, when you have a child that maybe can't stand up for themselves, or as a child with, say, a learning disability or a special need that, you know, could potentially be picked on, is you talk to the teachers, you talk to maybe other parents, find ways to get inclusive immersion activities where it becomes the norm. It's not anything different. I mean, it's like this. I went to a conference on how to dismantle systemic racism recently. And I don't even think along these lines, Shante, as probably not many people do that are well-educated out there, about, oh, there's a difference between the color of our skin, our culture, our ethnic background, our ability or disability. But I really had to unpack that to see that there is this perception, there's this underlying internal oppression among groups going on, and the best way to relieve that is through getting people immersed in activities. So, for example, to answer your second half of your question, I would say for parents to get together and start some fun, maybe community-based activity, some extracurricular school activity. At my school, I love it. We have unified sports. So we have kids that are leaders in the regular education setting that are like mentors to these other children that have special abilities. And I really believe they have, I said special abilities versus special needs. That's what, you know, I firmly believe in. But for kids that maybe don't see that, having that relationship can really change things. And I've seen some of my students who came in with a little chip on their shoulder, wanted to be in the popular group and didn't quite know what cool versus uncool was. But that completely changed because of the unified sports. And that's the key. Unify, immersion, that'll solve a lot of problems.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, we get more and more in the schools. I mean, that's what parents want. I mean, we all want that because it's so much better for our children that have different abilities, you know. And it also is a great thing, just like you were saying, for the students that get involved. They learn so much, too, from realizing that, you know, builds up their self-esteem. So it works both ways, you know.
It's great in the classroom because in the classroom I have a heterogeneous mixture of students. So, for instance, you know, I could recall even last year I had one class where I had a child with, you know, classic autism. I had another child with Down syndrome. I had a few children with ADHD. I had another child who was, you know, deemed socially emotionally disturbed. But you have all these, and then you have regular ed kids, and they all have different backgrounds themselves, where they're coming from. But it was fantastic because, you know, even in the classroom nowadays, it sets itself up where I personally, I'll partner kids together based on that whole way of one kid's being a leader of another kid, and they're bouncing each other skills off of one another. I don't know, it works perfect. And I think we need more of that in our society too. And for parents that don't see it in the schools, I'm just kind of thinking out loud, set it up in the community, set up a certain area, maybe in a park a certain day, or other parents say, okay, we'll set up a little kickball game, or we'll set up a little dodgeball or something like that.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's, I know, thank you for sharing that. I think that's a great tip because I know in our community, my daughter is fortunate right now and gets to attend like a social skills group, but it's kind of just a group of kids that get together and go to the mall, but do things that the typical children would do at a mall, but it gives them experience and they get to experience those things that they don't typically get to do. And, you know, and it's helping them build social skills and learning how to be friends and a lot of things that our kids with different abilities don't get enough opportunities to do.
Yes.
So I agree that I was thinking that if we parents can do more of encouraging that kind of stuff, it'll help their children as well. So,
and it will help the other children who are in those leadership roles feel empowered and that they're making a difference and they're making a positive difference. Because I think all kids want to be heard and they want to be understood. And all kids say, you know, don't judge me. And really, they don't want to be judged, but they want to feel that they're making a difference. And if they're making a difference in the right way, they don't need to lash out with negative behavior or try to put somebody else down to feel empowered.
Right. Well, is there anything else? I think you kind of answered a bunch of my questions. Is there anything else that you would like to add or share that I didn't ask you?
No, I mean, I really think that in today's generation, kids are dealing with a different set of issues than previous generations. And, you know, a lot of my speaking events, I'll start off by saying, all right, go back to when you were a teen or a tween. And how many of you knew of somebody, or maybe it was a personal experience, if you'd like to just share, just raise your hand if how many of you knew somebody who was involved in smoking. And most people are like, oh, I knew somebody, yeah. How about drinking? Okay. How about any substance abuse? Have you ever heard of anybody trying drugs? Oh, yeah. And then I say, okay, now go back to when you were that age. How many of you knew somebody who was cyber bullied? They're like, no. How about on social media issues and what app to use? How about online addictions,
right.
Cell phones, So I start going over all that, and they're like, no. I said, well, that's what today's kids are dealing with. They're dealing with the past and the present combined. And I think what I like to say is in my book, I talk about, and here's my book again. It's called, again, The Ultimate Guide to Raising Teens and Tweens, and it's strategies for unlocking your child's full potential. And I think that's really what it's all about, because you can only tell a child so much, you can give them so much, but if they feel loved, accepted, and that you're guiding them on a path to unlock their greatest passions and dreams and giving them all the necessary tools to do that, then they're going to be fine. They really are. They're going to make mistakes, they're going to fall, but they're going to have all the skills necessary to become what I call a 3S child and unlimited in their full potential. So thank you, Shante.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you sharing with us. And thank you for everything that you do. So, and I think also besides checking out your book, they can also go to your site, and that's, what is that address?
Yeah, they can go to my website, which is Doug Haddad, HADDAD.com. And I actually have a free 25-page guide on there, which is called The Whole Lot of Living Guide for you and your family. And it's really good. It talks about everything from how to create a healthy home space to healthy eating, exercising, thinking well, and sleeping well. A lot of people don't know there's multiple components to the holistic wellness paradigm. So I have that. And then for anybody who's interested for themselves, I have a 10-step sort of a principle course called 30 Days to Finding You and Start Living the Life You Imagine. And that goes through, there's a manual in there, and it goes through the 10 steps and approaches on how to really unlock, because a lot of times as adults, we get so clouded in day-to-day, and we lose sight of what do we really like to do versus what do we have to do versus what's going to make money versus, again, what do I really like to do, and can combine all that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. Well, yeah. Thank you for sharing. So you guys check out DouglasHaddad.com about health and nutrition and fitness and having a spiritual, clear mind. And I appreciate everything that you do. And on a personal note, I just want to share, I really did enjoy your book. I've been putting some of the things in play. And I liked very much the fact that when you asked us to put ourselves back, not necessarily, I didn't do it quite like the way you just described it a minute ago, but like put yourself back in your teen years. And that was just shocking, because I went right back to being in PE on the hardtop outside and playing basketball, you know, where we're the president. And it was like, oh my gosh, all those emotions came flooding back. And then I want to share one other thing with you too, because right after I had finished your book, I was going to church, and that Sunday, the seventh graders were up in front because they were getting confirmed or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there looking at them, oh my gosh, I never realized how rough their life is. You know what I mean? Because now I'm older, I haven't thought about it in years, but having brought those things back, it brought me back to, they have a rough life. You know? I appreciate that you made me kind of wake up and see that, hey, it's not so easy, and that, you know.
We glorify a lot of things too. We look back, and thank goodness we actually have the ability to block out the negative in going back. It's a protective mechanism that we have as humans. But once we start loading up, and I load up in this book, as you know, a good 30, 40 questions to relive that time.
Yeah.
And that reawakens the day-to-day experiences, you know, and not being so dreamy as, oh, I remember when I went to the prom with this, or I remember this sports event here, or I remember the homecoming, or, you know, what was it day-to-day like? And then that opens up doors for communication with a child.
Well, it really did. I can attest to that, because I'm telling you, I was back on that PE class and the hard top. I mean, I can remember it was green. It was hot. I can remember. It's interesting how you go right there. I was like, wow, that was very wild. I appreciated that. So,
absolutely.
Anyways, thank you for a great book, and I hope everyone checks it out. And thank you for this interview. I appreciate you sharing all the advice and tips and everything that you have done and do for us over the years. So thank you.
Well, thank you as well for this opportunity. It's been great working with Parenting Special Needs. I want to say to everybody out there who's listening right now, this is the best community for all information, whether you have a child with special needs, some learning disability, whether it's a child that you have that doesn't have any special needs. Actually, every child has special needs, and every child's special. So definitely check out every magazine. It comes out every other month. That's my promo, because I've been with your magazine writing for, I'd say, almost 10 years now. It's been very close to that.
Yeah, something like that.
And I
thank you.
So, thank you.
Thank you. All right, well, listen, take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.